Well, when I was thinking about what I could say when I was asked to share with you this morning, I did realize it was the second Sunday of Advent. So really, my mind and my heart went around thinking about the work up to Christmas. And that point, isn't this a busy month? Isn't it a month when we're running around chasing our tails, preparing for a day that suddenly disappears, doesn't it? It's here and it's gone, and it's Boxing Day and it's gone, and then we're down in the dumps for a few more days, and then lifted up again for New Year. So, my subject this morning is those wonderful words from John's Gospel. These are some of the greatest words that feed my heart and my mind. At this time of year, every year, I read these words and I marvel at the wonder of God's grace and God's love for us. Now then, I have served my apprenticeships to the Christmas season, and I'm sure that most people here have. Through the years, I've worn the tea towel. Have you worn the tea towel through the years? I put on the sheet and played all sorts of characters. I remember once when I was a very young man, a little bit younger than I am now, being an angel in a nativity play. Some would say typecast, others would not, but there we go. I was an angel. And it was when I was at school, and I was so embarrassed, my face was absolutely red. And so the teachers decided that they would put some white paint or whatever it was, or white stuff on my face. And of course, when I stood there as an angel, I was so warm, and the lights were so warm, that all this stuff run down my face. And so my face ended up half white and half red. What a sight. A very distinctive angel. I was once a king in a very large London carol service. And I had to walk down these steps at a very famous hall in London, the Royal Albert Hall. And I was a king, and I walked down these steps and almost fell over my robe, much to the delight of the many people who were around on the seats, and it caused a little bit of extra in that service. I have sat nervously as a parent, and later on as a grandparent, waiting for that one line to be said or sung. Would they get it in the right place? I think a lot of you can identify with that. That one word or one phrase or one line. And I have chased all over the Northwest looking for that particular toy. I can see a lot of faces, and a lot of people have been there and done these sort of things. And the toy that you're looking for is usually the one that there's a big shortage of in the shops, isn't it? It's usually that one. I'm sure they make a false shortage sometimes of these things in the shops. But let's not forget that Christmas is about a gift, isn't it? It's the greatest gift of all. That wonderful gift. Paul in 2 Corinthians 9 verse 15 says these wonderful words: thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. And that's what we're going to think about this morning. I read once that an 8-year-old girl wrote a letter to God. In fact, there was a book of letters to God. Somebody may have seen that or had that. And she wrote, "Dear God, can you write some more stories? We've heard all the old ones over and over again." And it's certainly so about the Christmas season, isn't it? Comes every year, Advent and Christmas. We read that same story. We listen to the same passages of scripture. The ones from the Old Testament promising the Messiah. We see the same nativity play year after year, don't we? About that journey to Bethlehem and the appearance of the angels and the shepherds. And in Matthew's gospel, the wise men. We sing the same Christmas carols every year, over and over again. We repeat the sweetness of that nativity scene. And we eat the same food and go to the same parties year after year. And we as a society and the Christian church has been doing that for 2,000 years. It's got a little bit more intense in the last 100 years, I suppose. But for 2,000 years, we've been repeating the same story. But for Mary and Joseph, the shepherds and the wise men and even the innkeeper, it was all very new and very exciting and very frightening all those days ago on the hills of Bethlehem. So how are we going to catch hold of some of that freshness after all these years of celebrating Christmas? How can we break through all that commercialism? How can we make it new? Well, when I was preparing for this meeting, and as I said, the portion of scripture that we read this morning is one that I go back to time and time again, not only at Christmas time, but at all times of the year. It's one of my favorite readings because it says some wonderful things about our gospel. When I read that 14th verse of John 1, what an earth-shattering statement that is. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory. Not in a palace, we often say. True, with none of the refinements of civilized life as we find it today. How can a baby be born in a stable in the wrong side of the Roman Empire in something so, is the right word, insanitary? Some of our fellowship have been watching the series of films called The Chosen. I don't know whether anybody's seen that recently. But we watched the Christmas one last week. And The Chosen is a little bit different. It's very much an alternate view of the Christmas story. And in the Christmas version, in this Christmas version, the stable is not put as something wonderful and sweet and stylized, but it was a really dirty shed. And when Jesus was born, He wasn't laid in a manger with all the loveliness that we see in a nativity play, but this viewing of the nativity story shows Jesus with blood all over Him. A crying baby. Just like a real newborn baby. In this very insanitary place. Now what is known as the prologue, get my teeth right, the prologue of John's gospel is so exciting. But what is it all about, this? What does it say? You see, the gospels, as we know, were not written in isolation. They were written against a background of a real world to tell people the gospel story, the real gospel story. Just as modern evangelists and ministries try to bring relevance to the Bible and the gospel to the modern age and the world in which we live now, John, when he wrote his gospel, tried to bring the message of Jesus and show it as relevant for the people who listened and read and heard the gospel. Well, the last thing that I am is a Greek scholar. I can't even speak English properly, never mind Greek. But I did read a few things about this that filled me with excitement, filled me with joy. You see, John was, by the time of the writing of the gospel, a very old man. He was living in a place called Ephesus, which was a Greek culture. Everything about it was Greek. There was a man called, a philosopher called Heraclitus, who had tried to move away from the idea that they had in those days, that there were many gods in the Roman world. And this Greek philosopher was the first person to try to move away from that. And what he taught was there weren't many gods, but there was one God. There was one God, even in Greek philosophy. But he taught that this God, this force, shall we use the word, was unknowable. Cannot get to know this force. Uninterested in this world. Yes, maybe created the world, but that was it. Not interested. Far away, distant. Abstract, maybe wrathful. Not loving and helping and forgiving and sacrificing like the God that we know. And he gave this idea a name, and it was debated among the Greek philosophers. They called it the Logos. And translated into English, this is translated as the Word. The Word. The Word that brought everything to life. That created everything. And John, when he comes along, he writes this prologue. This prologue to John's Gospel. And when we read it, he was writing for the people where he lived, and when you read it, there is so much in it that everybody around him could understand. In the beginning was the Word. In the beginning was the force that made everything. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life. And that life was the light of mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has never overcome it. Then he talks about John the Baptist, and he sets the scene about how John the Baptist made a preliminary statement about Jesus. And then he says one of the saddest verses in our entire Bible. He was in the world, and through him the world was made, but the world did not recognize him. Isn't that a sad verse? The world did not recognize him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. And then in verse 14, he says something completely different for the people that lived there and their understanding in Greek culture. He says something absolutely earth-shattering. The word was made flesh. That would have been absolutely earth-shattering for the readers. They thought of that God was something far away and far distant, unknowable. But the Word was made flesh. And we have seen his glory. Can you imagine? All the faith of the world, some of them with different philosophies and different beliefs, not one of them would even contemplate the idea that God could become flesh and dwell with us. Gospel means good news. And my friends, that is the best news in the world. The Word was made flesh. And that he shared our limitations. Someone once said, when Jesus, working in the workshop, hit his thumb, he probably didn't swear like a lot of carpenters would and joiners would, but it would hurt just the same way as anybody else. And when that crown of thorns was put on his head, that would be pain. When he was nailed to the cross, that would be real pain. He would share the same emotions that we would share. He laughed and he cried and he feared. Think about that Garden of Gethsemane. Think how about that prayer of Jesus. Lord, if it is your will, take this away from me. Yet not my will, but your will be done. Why did he do it? Because of his great love for us. And that's what we're sharing. That's what we're celebrating at Christmas time. I read only the other day that only in a poll, only 37% of people said that Christ had anything to do with their Christmas at all. 37%. But that's not so for us. On this wonderful season and on that great day, we will be celebrating that the Word was made flesh. So, how are we going to approach this Christmas time? Are we going to go into it in the usual mode, the same parties and the same experiences that we always have? Or are we going to look again at that message, that reality, that Jesus, God, became flesh for us? Remember that little girl who said, dear God, can you write some new stories? We know the old ones well. Can we write our own story in our own life and our own experience of Christmas time this year? Are we just going to move into the same mold that we always have done? One of the things that blessed me last year at Christmas time was, I know so many people were sorrowful that they couldn't meet with friends and relatives, and that was so. We were lucky enough to use Zoom, etc., with our friends and relatives. But what it did for me was it focused my heart and mind on the real meaning of Christmas. Elizabeth and I decided last December that we would watch either a Christmas carol service or a Christmas concert every night in December on YouTube. And I think that I had more blessing last December approaching the Christmas season than I ever did in partying and shopping and doing all the things that we normally do. Can we focus our heart and our mind on Christ this Christmas time?